And it is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast, and it is 8 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is March 28, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to talk about the latest events in Europe and the Middle East and the repercussions of decision-making by the government. You know, it's not easy these days, but we're going to make sense out of it. Now, let's start. Let's start with what happened last week. We had an attack in Bruxelles, Belgium, in the airport. Many lives were shattered in the metro station. Now, technically, those places supposed to be the most, controlled, the most scrutinized, the most witnessed. We need to start up raising our eyes and check the situation. And I'm not telling you change your view about the people, change your view about religion or anything. You just need to be safe. Being safe, it means that you need to take care of business. It means the airport supposed to be your number one priority. Your metro is supposed to be definitely centered in your, duty. And I know that there are people that think that they can ruin the Western way of living. And we come a long way since the first and the Second World War to let them all start the third. And it seems like the deals are starting to fall in place, and there are things that to be said still. But we still never understood what the heck those goons want from us. So let's start with the first segment.
We stand with you today and with our friends in Europe and with all peace-loving nations. We
believe that the message that is coming from Amman constantly and consistently of an Islam that is an Islam of peace and dialogue and cooperation is what we need in this moment, here in the region and in Europe. I will stop here. You will understand this. Today is...
Thank you very much. Thank you for your kind words. Thank you for your strong message of support to Jordan. And
Wow, that was the EU foreign affairs chief that broke down in tears, crying over the Bruxelles incidents. It's not easy, to be surrounded with so many people in this time of crisis. And she was talking in Jordan about the collaboration and really hopeful for the event to change. We do need to change the page in history, on ISIS. I don't know if they're going to get enlightened or God will bless them with some kind of understanding to what they're doing and to remind them that there is a God and it's not them or it's not us, and we need to start respecting human life. It's not easy. So we are always together with the people of the world and standing up to any wrongdoing like that. And there are so many wrongdoing. And, in the situation in Israel, sometimes it's really tricky because recently, a few days back, we had an incident where a terrorist attack was happening in Hebron. Hebron is the city of the patriarch. Now, I'm not going to sugarcoat it for anybody, but I'm going to tell it as it is and the story true to God, whatever I saw and understood and what my opinion is. Let's say we have a situation where there was a terror attack. Now, the troops, the soldiers, the Israeli IDF are sitting in Hebron under international agreement, peace accord with the Palestinian, which stated that Hebron is divided to H1 and H2. I don't know where the H come from, but it doesn't matter. H1 is a Palestinian area. H2 is the Israeli troop area that's supposed to take control of the public places where, you know, the interaction between two sides are happening. And then you have the Jewish population that needs protection, I guess. And they are set up there by an agreement with the Palestinian, all right? Now, it's the tomb of the patriarch. This is the place where people from the Bible, Abram, Jacob, and Isaac are buried in a different order. It's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Those are, you know, the patriarch of the universe, for matter of fact. It's from the Bible. Then you have the matriarch there. You have Sarah, the wife of Abraham. Then you have Rebecca, the wife of Isaac. And then you have Leah, which is the second wife of Jacob. Remember the story about Jacob marrying to the sister because she was the oldest, and then Rachel needed to work 7 years again and again, another 7 years just for her father to give him. So he was married to two sisters. Now, Rachel, the mother of the Jewish people, the matriarch, she's buried in Bethlehem, which for some reason her tomb is under jurisdiction of the Palestinian, which is odd. It's still odd in my, you know, nobody will make sense out of it. And we need to start fixing stuff because it's not normal. So we have the patriarch, you know, ancestors' historical place. And you got IDF troops sitting there because they have to protect the, you know, people visiting. And, you know, in the, inside the tomb, it's divided between, you know, this is your father and this is my father. It's like nuts. You have to go through a wall between the patriarch's tomb. And you cannot cross over to the other side. So you cannot never visit all of them together, just in special occasion. And I don't even know when it is. Okay, so let's start. An incident. The guy terrorists come and attack a soldier. Soldier is wounded. They got a hold of the terrorists, knocked them down. I don't know what they did because there wasn't camera then. And then the cameraman, Palestinian, was starting to shoot. He belongs to a civil organization, B'Tselem, which is not so Israeli, but it's okay. It's a watchful for human rights. I love this entitlement. But I don't know where they got the fan from, and they are picturing this event. Now, a guy, a soldier, out of the blue, come around, and is checking it out. Now, remember, when there is a terrorist, there is always a risk of a different bomb setting. And the terrorist usually, if it might carry a belt, explosive belt. So this guy came late to the event and decided to shoot the terrorist on the ground, in the head, blank. Now, of course, I'm all suspended with what the heck was going on, what he was thinking, and why he did he do that. Now, the same did the Minister of Defense, obviously, the Prime Minister of Israel. Everybody was, like, reluctant to what's going on. Now, soldier, being a soldier, they have to be under umbrella of protection. But since this video got to the public, it's not like you can have a, you know, military court. It's become the court of media affair, right? So now we have riots. Now we have people talking all over. It's on the media, right? That's saying that, nobody should condemn him because he killed a terrorist. He might have a bomb. And the other say, you know, you don't shoot somebody who's on the ground. So you have every reason is plausible, but, you know, it didn't look good. It wasn't right as far as the end game goes. Let's say he didn't have explosive belt and at the end of the matter. The risk is bad because we had it happen before. So if anybody will check, there is histories of Israel not, you know, finishing the terrorists and then they killed that, you know, terrorists got away and killed them, explode himself. It's not easy, all right? But the idea is that now the guy is in jail and he's facing some kind of tribunal court. Now, there are, of course, the people saying, oh, you have to do all sorts of things. It's a military. Under a military with a gun, with a rifle, that's what it happened. It can happen when people shoot their friends, when they get killed, you know, get the one for killing, we don't know. But it's on the ground. That's what's happening. It's Israel. It's crazy. It's not normal. People are getting attacked by knives in the street sometimes. And you got a crazy result. Yeah, crazy living with crazy results. That's a normal life in the Middle East. So before we go on to the next segment, let's listen to some music that I hope you'll enjoy.
Vorrei tornare indietro, ma quanti sbagli fra ho capito che non li ripeto. Il cuore dentro si era fatto qui come la pietra. A 15 anni una promessa che volevo questo e prendermi anche una cometa. Quante notti oscurate, notte spaccate, notte stonate. Quanti dei nostri affari le cose sbagliate.
All right, and we are back. It's really Benny Davis with The Impossible True. That was a song from Sanremo 2016, I think. You know, it's a special talent sometimes in my, you know, home. Italy is a part of our lives here, and we love it. And it's actually, it's good to have Italy in my life since I live in Israel, which is crazy, as I told you. Now, another crazy story is happening, too, on the ground. And not long ago, there was a big find of gas in Israel, where everybody was so happy because they found, you know, the resource and the discovery is immense. And there was many years of dialogue and thinking, and yesterday there was a court hearing about the accord that the Noble Energy had with the government, and the judgment was different than was expected. So let's listen to introduce you to the idea so you can understand what we're talking about. Let's listen.
It's a running joke here in Israel. Moses led the Jews through the desert for 40 years to the only place in the Middle East with no oil and no gas. So for all its 65 years, Israel has been almost totally dependent on fuel imports for energy. Costly and precarious for a nation surrounded by often hostile neighbors. But now that's all changing. Israel has at last discovered so much natural gas, it's heading towards energy independence, a gas exporter in just a few years. 56 miles off Israel's Mediterranean coast, the Tamar Reservoir started flowing earlier this year, with enough gas to supply Israel for decades. Another field nearby, almost twice as big, should be pumping in 3 to 4 years. Israel believes both fields lie well within its maritime borders, though the Lebanese government has challenged that. The stakes are high because there are also reports of huge oil deposits near the very same gas fields. Some call these new discoveries an economic miracle.
Amazing, amazing, amazing story.
And that joke about Moses?
We proved that joke to be wrong.
There's dual pipeline, 16-inch pipeline.
It all began with Gideon Tadmor and his small Israeli company, which began drilling for oil and gas onshore in 1991.
Obviously, we needed luck and God's help. We needed the resources to be underground. But I think that the unique contribution that we were able to bring is the human spirits and the belief.
Well,
Tadmore, a lawyer by training, also needed partners with drilling experience willing to invest millions. He had a hunch there was gas in Israeli waters because Egypt had found some nearby, and he sought investment from the Texas oil giants. But he says nobody bit, afraid, Tadmore believed, of upsetting their much bigger customers, the Arabs. Finally, a small Texas company with no Arab clients, today called Noble Energy, agreed to invest in the Israeli dream.
Started the energy industry here in Israel.
It was a completely new industry here, is that correct?
That's correct.
You began from, you literally helped found it from nothing.
That's correct.
There it is, the Tamar gas.
Gas began flowing through the Tamar platform in March. It should soon be able to generate most of Israel's electricity, instead of relying on costly imports of coal, diesel, and heavy fuel oil.
We estimate that in fuel savings alone to the power plants that go right to the consumer, that over the life of Tamar, Israel will save over $100 billion. In fuel savings.
It took considerable engineering to get at the gas. Five wells were drilled, some more than 3 miles below the seabed, in waters too deep for a production platform. So pipes were laid to shallower waters more than 90 miles away, the longest so-called tieback in the world. The platform and base were built in Texas and transported more than 8,000 miles to the Mediterranean, where the base was plunged into the sea and the platform placed on top. From conception to operation, just over 4 years.
This is a gigantic place. The Tamar platform weighs 34,000 tons. It's 290 meters high, and 50 people work here around the clock. This is where it's coming in.
On the platform, water and humidity are separated from the gas. It then comes onshore here, is filtered again, and is fed to multiple power stations, which convert it into electricity to feed Israel's electric grid. It's already helping the environment. Today, 40% of Israel's electricity is fueled by gas. It's much cheaper and much cleaner than oil.
We've saved the country 17 million metric tons of CO2 emissions.
What does that mean?
That's the equivalent of taking all the cars in Israel off the road for over a year. So it's a big thing.
The biggest benefit, a huge boost to Israel's economy. Gas will add 1% to Israel's GDP this year. And that's triggered a debate here.
What will Israel do with its financial windfall? The key question, will energy independence make Israel stronger, and how?
It's a red-hot topic in a country that already spends 20% of its budget on defense, far more than other Western nations. Critics worry that protecting the new platforms, sitting ducks at sea, will mean even more money is diverted from domestic spending to defense, and they say that's a bad idea. There have also been protests about the government's plan to export much of the gas. The government says that will generate billions in new revenues. But critics say the government acted without necessary parliamentary approval, and they're challenging the plan in court. Lawmakers like Tamar Zandberg say more gas should be kept at home and more of the gas revenues should be invested in domestic programs other than defense.
There is an economic and a social threat, and poverty is a bigger threat than security right now to Israel. The prices are going up, salaries are going down, and social services like, for example, housing are being neglected. We should build a more viable and a more sustainable economy. And this is something that the natural gas can truly help doing, but it takes patience.
And there's another aspect to this story. How will Israel's gas find affect the always volatile politics of the region? That's a concern because the gas basin is believed to extend into waters off Syria and Lebanon, both technically at war with Israel. And Israel's maritime border with Lebanon is in dispute. Michael Levy, an expert on natural gas and energy security at the Council on Foreign Relations, sees both opportunities and risks in the gas discoveries. He worries that maritime border disputes could erupt.
If you disagree about where your borders are and you both claim areas as your own, if something valuable is discovered there, you're going to have some conflict, at least diplomatic, over who gets to develop the wealth of that area.
But he also sees opportunities.
Now we're looking at Israeli exports into the Palestinian territories and into Jordan. That will intensify the economic relationship between those parties. And on top of all that, you'll see discussions about new trade relationships. For example, will Israel be able to strike up trade arrangements with Turkey.
Better Israeli-Arab relations? Inshallah, they say in Arabic. Bezrat Hashem in Hebrew, with God's help. But whatever happens, gas and oil will make Israel a wealthier country, less reliant on others. And that's no joking matter.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benedivis with the Impossible Truth. So we have gas resources to develop. We have one that's been developed for a long time already, Tamar, they call it. And it's a little west from the shore of Tel Aviv and Haifa, which is making Lebanon on top, you know, in the borderline to the reservoir. The question is if Lebanon will be one day a friend of Israel, which we all can collaborate and help, because Cyprus is created a Block 12, Aphrodite, they call it, nice name. And they are planning to drill, I guess, and there were a lot of meeting lately in Cyprus. If anybody was wondering why, the gas probably was the top of the agenda. So the idea is that there is a resource, and now they have to drill a bigger resource that they found. And they went to the government of Israel, Noble Energy, with all the partnership, and wanted to make a deal to start implementing an accord, which will be 15 years free of any governmental scrutiny, so they can develop. You know, it takes like 4 years to situate the base and create the reservoir. And then you go and you're digging, and before you actually go into profit and everything, probably years will pass. So 15 years they wanted free of any governmental, any changes, any, you know how government are, you know, you can, they can block, you can start. And if you invest so much money, you need to have some kind of assurance. So they went to sign it on, but for some reason there was a resistance. So they took it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court yesterday decided that they need to review the accord and make a different alternation by legislation to create a new rule to protect those reservoirs in a different way that they thought. Now, trust that you don't know the deal for real, because they're talking, and once I'm talking to you, I know, I realize that they never actually disclose what was the detail of the deal. Because when you say to me, I have to legislate the 10 years, the government won't bind, mind you, it's really funny, okay? It's not clear. Anyway, I got more information about this. Let's listen to the next segment on the energy reservoirs.
Some are calling it a potential energy revolution. Off the coast of Israel, in the waters of the Mediterranean Sea, explorers have found the largest offshore gas reserve in the world in a decade. This is a major development because Israel has long been one of the few Middle East countries without its own oil and gas resources.
The joke was that, you know, why did it take Moses 40 years to bring people of Israel from Egypt to Israel? Because he looked for the only place in the Middle East that lacks oil and gas. So that was the joke. But we proved the joke to be wrong. And actually, we know that Moses brought us to the right place.
Delek Energy and its American partner Noble are behind the discoveries that will start producing natural gas for customers in 2015. Energy expert and former CIA chief James Woolsey says the gas fields could make Israel energy independent.
Well, they're extraordinarily important and strategically very advantageous, I think, for Israel.
Not only is Israel sitting on huge natural gas reserves, the country is also rich in oil shale, a fine-grained rock from which oil is extracted through cutting-edge technology. Scientist Harold Vinegar says the amount of oil shale buried here might equal the oil reserves of Saudi Arabia.
We think it's conservatively estimated at about 250 billion barrels of oil contained in the Israeli oil shale, probably the second or third largest deposit in the whole world. And it has a tremendous potential to make an oil industry here.
Experts say there's enough oil shale to produce at least 50,000 barrels of oil a day, enough to meet Israel's military and civil aviation needs for 25 years. Israel Energy Initiatives is now performing quality tests.
I have a piece of oil shale here that we've just cored in this rig behind us.
Vinegar is a former chief scientist for Shell. He says the samples show that oil quality is high before it's even refined. As the world population increases, so will the demand for oil, and that will push up the price. Countries like Israel that import most of their energy will have to develop unconventional resources.
There's nothing scarier than running out of energy. I mean, wars have been fought entirely for oil, and so this is something that we feel we're doing for Israel, which is to develop the oil shale here.
And if his group's plans work out, this land will hold even more promise for the future. Wendy Griffith, CBN News.
All right, that was a great, great remark. More promise to the future. Yes, you guys, if you let everybody work, we can start building the region, because I know Syrian troops got another piece of their land in the historic segment of Tenmore. They call it Palmyra. So whatever historical structure are holding still to the date, they got really, really lucky, and we're happy. So the idea is, in the long run, we need to start collaborating between us all, because the resources is ours. It's here around. It's in Cyprus. It's in Israel. It's probably a little to the north, too. So the idea is we need to become neighbors, normal neighbors, you know, like Canada and America. That will be the day, right? Anyway, I am a believer. I believe that people are good, and I believe that there is a day. They just need to get rid of, you know, all the extra curriculum activity that they cherish so much to kill themselves for free, you know? They just volunteer and bomb themselves. Of course, they need to take some other people, but what the heck? Why are they doing it? God knows. Let's pray for them. Let's pray for the world to get them some light and bring them some peace to their hearts, so they stop bombing and we can start having fun again. Because, guys, I'm getting really, really old fast here doing it, and we need to really get back to creating a better future for the children, good music, good art, good theater, stuff that makes that will last forever, like in the old ages. You know, stories. It seems like we didn't create any good stories, but they're shooting one to another. Now, Hollywood, this is all your deal, right? The life of fellow arts, this is exactly how you created it, right? Let's create some beauty with some Disney World kind of stuff. Okay, we need it. You never know. It might come true, but it doesn't matter as long as we start relaxing ourselves, because it's no more of this. All right? Let's get some music, and we'll be back after that.
E mi stravolgi il sole, mi soffochi le nuvole, mi sporchi il cielo, mani piene di colore. Che faccia fa l'amore, mi prendi a calci, sogno il cuore, bocca piena di parole.
Right, that was another San Remo Festival, Italian music of 2016. I love it. I think they are great, musicians. And, you know, when you listen to the Italian version, it's really, really, the way they sing, it's different from what we know in America, which is, it's nice because it's different, but it's really passionate. Okay, let's go back to what's going on. So we have the peace accord coming to play, or some kind of ceasefire come to play in Syria. We need to still decide what's going to happen with Assad regime, if 18 months from now we're going to have election, if there is any way to get them off slowly and choose another leader that will suit them, because whatever it is, they'll have to leave behind some kind of understanding. But in the whole thing, there was like kind of wondering what's going to happen with Russia that left. And we realized that there was a special meeting happening in Moscow a few days ago, or the beginning of the month. Let's listen to that.
Russia's Interfax news agency quoted Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Oleg Sirimolotov as saying on Monday that the director of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, John Brennan, visited Moscow at the start of March. Sirimolotov was quoted as saying Brennan had meetings at Russia's Federal Security Service, among other places, and his visit was not linked to the decision by Moscow to start withdrawing its forces from Syria.
All right. If we were wondering if there is some kind of communication between the Russian and the American, well, there you go. They do have communication. We're still in process of organizing Syria, and everybody is playing right. Now, just pay attention. There is an alert on Turkey travelers since the last attack was, aimed to the center of a town there of Istanbul, but it caught three Israeli, which two of them were with American citizenship too. So we don't know if they intentionally wanted to attack the Israeli or just because of they happened to be there. So they found that they're gonna grab the occasion and bomb themselves there. Anyway, there is a communication alert that's saying that Turkey is not a safe guard, it's not safe to travel. If you have a business meeting there or whatever, just pay attention. If you're traveling, please go some other place. We need to keep everybody out of the way of the crisis centers, especially when Turkey is, it's the center between the European borders and between the Middle East. It's on north of all the craziness. So what happened is that many people go through this, and a lot of refugees are there, which means that there is a kind of chaos happening there, even though that it's a big, strong, organized country. I know that they used to host a lot of Israelis. It was the best place to visit for years. And since they had a dispute over the little ship that they sent with some terrorists with knives, which Israel had to sabotage, since then they never created any way back to normal relationship, even though that lately after the bomb the Turks seems to have some kind of understanding how to get back to the play. You see, the deal is, if we are gonna change our modus operandi every time there is an incident. Like in Hebron, there was an incident with a soldier yesterday. Wherever incidents that are happening, you cannot stop and decide that everybody to blame. Like we all say, you need to be in perspective. But the Turks decided they took it personally. And out on top, they wanted Israel to stop the siege on Gaza. Now, you have to understand, when people are shipping arms from Iran, we need to monitor it. What do you think? It's not like a neighbor, the good neighbor, that he said, okay, we're not gonna keep seize over them. They need to start talking peace or else. And for some reason, there was a new happening in the latest, if nobody pay attention. I don't know if it's programmed or not, but if they are going in the right direction, I really pray for that. The Gaza removed the flag of the Muslim Brotherhood to the applause of the Egyptians. So they're going to start relationship to, you know, amendment, kind of. And the Palestinian PLO, which as, you know, the organizational, you know, realm of the Palestinians, are making talks with the Gaza, with a part of Hamas. Now, remember, Hamas is a terrorist organization, and it's terrorist not because the people are bad. It's terrorist because it wants to destroy another nation. I would call that qualified to be called terrorist organization. Now, when the Palestinians decide to make unified with them, it makes you wonder where they're going. So I don't think it's a good thing for the PLO. All right. Let's get some more music and we'll be back after. We are back. That was an old song that I like so much. And, you know, there are other songs that come to mind sometimes and you just want to play it for all, especially for my older brother, Gabriel, which loves music and he's the best. So that's for him. Anyway, let me tell you something. Would anybody will tell those the Arab party in the you know, the government of Israel to stop messing with the head, the former head of the Shin Bet, which is the former head of the, like, kind of FBI in Israel. For some reason, they decided to start antagonizing the Jewish state in so many ways. And when they go on attacking, you know, verbally, the head of the Shin Bet, he will get out of this way, his way to, you know, to humiliate them and get them out of the government. I think that they're doing a big, big mistake and disservice for their own constituents because they need to serve the Arab Israeli, not the Palestinian. And when you call another head of, former head of such an organization that, you know, try to keep safe heaven between Israeli and Arabs and other minority, you're risking to get actually in trouble, let's say it minorly, because everybody can get picked on. And of course, there is so much weapons there. There is so much illegal trafficking of stuff there. There is so much construction that it's not legal. There is so much that they can get in trouble for, and they are risking. And when I see them head to head today in the government, I would call them and say, guys, back off. Apologize if necessary, but this is not the way to go. It's not a way to serve not Israel as the country to live and reside and get paid by, and also the Arab constituents. I don't know if it's going to end, but some way or another, it needs to turn page on this story. Anyway, it's almost time. I hope there is a song that I really wanted you to listen to, and I hope we can manage to find it, because it's a, you know, there is a Eurovision coming up too soon. The Eurovision is the festival for all the European countries that come, and they come from every nation, and every representative has a song, and then they show pictures of the country they come from, and they make a nice introduction in the language of the state. It's really, really pretty. You can see the Eurovision coming up in April. And we have a great star. We call Hobby. Hobby is, I don't know where this thing come from. It's like it's a nickname or something. And it's called Hobby Star. And one thing I have to tell you, not every day I can say to you that we're sending somebody special, a messenger of happiness, goodwill, and kindness. I think that this year Israel found an exceptional candidate, and somebody that I really, really look forward to see what he creates. He's a new guy, new star, nothing to come, and he's overwhelmed with the idea that he has to represent the country, but he's a cool dude. So I hope we can listen to his song soon, and we'll talk to you after that. Let's listen to this. All right, that was a beautiful song from the 80s. Wow, when I dedicated it to my old found friend, Mauro, in Italy. God bless you. Anyway, I promise you to have Hobby Star. Hobby Star is special guy, you know, he's going to Sweden to represent Israel. But please, world, welcome this guy, because he is fantastic. His humanity, his kindness, his amazing energy, and he's so cool. So let's say goodbye now, and blessing you, and hoping that the world will be better next week, because I hope, I pray, and I send all my love to all of you, and with a big hug and a big, big embrace. God bless you all. Take care of yourself, all right? Ciao, ciao.